Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Sunstone Fireside Podcast. I am one of your co-hosts, Blair Osler. Today, I have with me Danny Dawson. Danny is an openly gay BYU student who will be graduating this April in microbiology and Chinese. Danny, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm really excited.
Good. No, I'm really excited to have someone here who's at BYU and openly gay. I had a really hard time finding someone who was willing to come on and talk about these things because there's a lot of fear wrapped up in what's going on at BYU right now. So for the listeners, I'm going to give you a brief download of information just to fill you in on all the things that have been happening in the queer Mormon community this last month. So for those of you who aren't totally up to date, there's a lot going on this last month. The church released changes in the handbook concerning gender expressions and worthiness of transgender members in the church, while also removing some problematic language surrounding baptism of children of queer parents in the church. Also this month, the BYU Honor Code Office released an updated version of the Honor Code that removed problematic language concerning same-sex physical contact and dating, and this was interpreted by many, including BYU faculty, to mean that same-sex dating would be treated the same as heterosexual dating. However, a clarification letter was sent out from the CES commissioner's office clarifying that same-sex dating will not be considered the same as heterosexual dating because it doesn't lead to eternal marriage. That's a quote. Since the release of that statement, students have organized protests on campus. There's been at least two that I've been to. And then students organized a demonstration or protest up in Salt Lake City at the church office building. So lots going on in the queer Mormon community right now. And I'm so glad that Danny has agreed to come on the show and talk with me about what's going on. I was really worried about talking over the voices of queer students just because sometimes I think queer adults who have been in the game a long time, we pass along our baggage along to these kids. And I really didn't want to do that. I want to hear what these kids have to say. And I say these kids, but I'm like your big sister, basically. But anyway, so Danny, now that everyone's filled in, I want to learn all about you. Let's start at the beginning. When did you first realize you were gay?
Oh, boy. Okay, so, I mean, I don't know the exact age, but it's anywhere from, like, 8 to 12 years old. Mm-hmm. Like, very, very early on. And for me, it was actually when we were going shopping for cards for, like, I don't know what it was, like, wedding, birthday, something. And I realized that there's cards that have shirtless men on them.
Oh,
and
really?
I saw them, yeah. And I was like, oh my sweet goodness. And I realized then, and it was a lot more than that too. Like, I mean, starting to go through like puberty too and having conversations with people and hearing the way that other men like talk about like girls and like attractions and things like that. And just always realizing like, I've never felt that, but like what you're describing, I like maybe feel towards like either that person telling me or like towards other men, mm-hmm. And you know, just fairly early on realizing.
Yeah. So did you also grow up Mormon too?
I did. Yes.
Okay. A lifelong member of the church.
Yep.
And how has that experience been for you? Did you go on a mission?
I did.
Okay.
So I served my mission in Taiwan, the Taichung mission, 2013 to 2015. And that's where, so my mom's Taiwanese, so she was born and raised in Taiwan, joined the church there when she was 23, then my dad's from Ireland, and then he immigrated here when he was young with his family, and then they met in Japan, got married there in the Tokyo Temple, and then came here and had their family.
Well, that's amazing. So you're half Irish, half Taiwanese.
Yes.
Oh, that's amazing. Very cool. And so, wow, where did you grow up then?
All in Bountiful, Utah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So born and raised in Utah.
Gotcha. So would you say it's a pretty typical Mormon upbringing experience or?
Yeah, I'd definitely say so. I mean, just getting along with everybody in the ward growing up. I feel like I look back on it and I feel like I had like a very happy, like for most of the part. Because like, I mean, I could still accept and be really comfortable with 95% of like who I was, mm-hmm. You know, but it was that last like 5% that I just like really had to suppress. But it was happy. Scouting trips, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. Ward activities, cook-offs. It was good.
Good, good. So then once you started to realize you were attracted to other men, you're like, oh, I might be gay. Did you have the vocabulary to describe yourself as gay, or were you just like, I like boys? What was it like?
Right. I think the vocabulary was given to me early on by my older sisters. My oldest sister is 8 years older, and then the other one is 7 years older than me. And so, you know, they were already like in college and high school and more cognizant of these things, and they saw how I acted and stuff. And so they kind of just knew. So hearing their talk, their discussion and like explanation of things kind of like taught me what that was. I have an uncle who's gay, and he was like, he was also like that gay uncle that was there that I like kind of knew of. He has his own like personal problems, that he's chosen to not be a part of the family. And so that was another thing that made me feel like, I don't know if this is something I want to accept, because there's that worry of like, I'm going to turn out like him and ostracize my entire family. But yeah, as far as like knowing what to like call it, I think I was pretty clear.
Yeah. Yeah. So then once you kind of came to the realization that you were gay, how did you approach talking to your family about this? I assume, who did you come out to first? Family, friends?
Yeah, my brother first.
Your brother.
Well, yeah. So my biggest problem was, you know, I realized when I was like 12 years old, and to be a 12-year-old and realize that you have this attraction, and it's so much more to you than just like the desire to like want to like, you know, intimately be with a man, but it's like who you want to like have emotional connections with, who you want to find like partnership with. And so many of these things, like the problem was realizing that so early on is I also made the decision that I would never act on it and I would stay in the church for my entire life. And I made that, and I made the decision too, that if I was ever, at that time I said, if I was ever weak enough to leave the church that and like come out as gay, that coming out as gay was the same decision as leaving the church. And that's a really hard decision for a 12-year-old to make. And that's why I feel like it took me so long.
So in your mind, if I'm hearing you correctly, it was a dichotomy. It was either gay and not Mormon, or Mormon and not gay.
Correct.
Okay, I see. And do you feel differently now?
No.
No? You're like, there's still no way to be both.
I mean, I've definitely become more nuanced about that conversation, and I realize that it can happen.
Yeah.
And I have a lot of respect for people who do want to do that. And I think that they are living the happiest life that they can. Mm-hmm. You know, just because they're not living a life that I would choose doesn't mean that.
Gotcha. Okay. So then fast forward, you're starting to come out to your family members.
Yeah.
And how did they receive it?
Yeah, so I first, oh gosh, this is funny. And if my brother ever listens to this, he'll kill me. No, I'm just kidding. So I first came out, let's see here. I had a year at BYU. It was my junior year, and I was really struggling with it. And, you know, lots and lots of tears, lots of confusion about that. But I decided I didn't want to come out then. And then I took a gap year in between my junior and senior year, and I went to China. So I lived in China for an entire year, and I told myself, like, hey, like, right before I left to China, I knew I was going to come out, but I didn't want to do it before I left to China. I was like, you know, I want to be with my family, and I want them to see that, like, I'm still the same person, and not just, like, drop this and then yeet myself out of the country. So that's kind of what I decided, but the night before I left, I was with my brother and sister in California, and he talked to me and had like a very like open conversation with me about him and his wife and their decisions with the church, and that they had chosen to leave, and that was hard to talk to my parents about, or that they were worried at least. And we were crying, and when somebody shares something emotional, I just felt like I did too. So I told him, and he was amazing. He was very, very accepting. I will always remember though, he did, after he gave me the biggest hug and just told me how much he loved me, he did have a question. He's like, Danny, like, are you like sure that it's gay? Have you thought that like maybe you could be asexual? And then he said, he's like, let me rephrase this. Like, do you have like strong sexual desires towards men? And little baby gay Danny didn't know how to respond.
Baby gay Danny, I love it.
I was just sitting there like, I don't feel comfortable telling you that I do. But, like, that's exactly what you're asking, so yes?
Yeah.
Like, and also I've thought about this for a long time, you know, and I just thought that was funny, like, of all the other things, it was asexual, so.
Yeah.
And then from there, it was easy to tell my sister. Sisters, they were very accepting. They both left the church, and so I was really lucky to have them. And it was a little bit harder telling my family or my parents specifically.
It always is. It always is.
Yeah, they came and visited me over Chinese New Year. Well, sorry, Normal New Year. When I was in China, they came to Nanjing, and together we took a trip over to Shanghai and spent a couple of days there. And I told them, and it was really, really good, mostly. They're both very supportive, and I know that they love me a lot. I think Asian culture is very hard to express emotions, especially when your hopes and desires for your child are not going to happen in the way that you see them happen. So there was many phrases and statements said by my mom about her disappointment in me choosing this, and how it was one of the hardest things that any of her children have ever put her through, and things like that that were really hard. Mm-hmm. But looking back, it's just all about intent. She doesn't say those things to be hurt. She's hurtful. She says them because she loves me, you know? Mm-hmm. And she just, like, wanted me to have, like, this really great life, so.
Wow, that's really mature of you, like, to handle it that way.
It's been a year and 3 months, so I've had a lot of time to think about it.
Sure, sure. So, and this was, so you came out after your mission then?
Yes.
Okay. What was it like on your mission as far as, like, did you know pretty steadily, you're like, okay, I'm gay, but I'm going to solidly serve my mission and do, you know, choose the right, so to speak. What was that experience like for you?
It was phenomenal.
Where did you serve again?
Taiwan.
Okay.
Yes. Taiwan, the Taichung mission. And it was really, really phenomenal. I felt like I could have 2 years to just focus on my mission, mm-hmm. and my relationship with God. And I feel like in society, you're very, like, cultured to appreciate or think what's beautiful as what you're surrounded by. So because I grew up in Bountiful, Utah, and there's a lot of white people there, I'm usually naturally attracted to white people. So I'm not necessarily very attracted to Asian people. And I thought that I always considered that like a blessing. Like, God knew me, so he sent me to Taiwan, where I just wasn't really attracted to anybody there. And I was able to just focus, and it wasn't a distraction.
So then overall, you would say your mission was a good experience?
Yes.
Yeah. And so you don't regret it at all?
Not at all. Yeah.
Cool. Cool. Which is funny because, like, and I interview a lot of people who have left the church too, mm-hmm. but so many times the resounding response to that is like, I don't regret my mission.
Yeah.
Like, even the hard missions, and they're like, I don't regret doing this, which is really interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. That it's like this really big growing experience for people.
Yeah.
Okay. So you got back from your mission and you started coming out to your parents and family, and what happens at BYU then? You're a BYU student. You're starting to come out as gay. And what is BYU's reaction, if any?
Yeah. So the first year that I was out, I was able to be in China. And, you know, China's not accepting of the LGBTQ community at all. But because I'm a foreigner, it's a double standard. They don't hold me to the standards of Asian culture. Mm-hmm. And so it was one of the most freeing experiences. I could be out. I had a group of BYU students and students from around different universities in the country that all, like, supported and just, like, loved me. And it made it really easy to move past gay being my identity. I rode, you know, that little, like, 3 month period of, like, gayphoria that, like, I'm out, I need to tell the whole world. I've spent the past, like, 23 years having people not know this.
Yeah.
So I need to spend the next 23 making sure everyone knows.
Right.
No, but it just made it so easy to move past that and just be like, people just like me because of me, and part of me is that I'm gay, and nobody cares.
That is so beautiful.
Right.
I love that so much.
That was really awesome. But then juxtapose that with coming to BYU. I was terrified. And I gained a lot of weight right before I came back to BYU. I was very, very scared. And
before you even got there.
Yeah, before I even got there, because I was terrified about how, you know, me being myself all-encompassing and how amazing that felt. How was that going to happen at BYU? And I kind of just told myself, like, it's just 2 semesters, it's a year, and you're going to be done. You just, like, need to make it through. And what I realized happened is as soon as I went back to BYU, I was like, nobody needs to know this part of you. Like, you're past that. Like, people can just, like, know about you. But because there was this one thing that I couldn't tell people, I became, like, so hyper fixated on it, and it became my entire, like, identity.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it just felt like I couldn't be myself or like show everything about me to people because there was this one thing that I couldn't tell.
You know what? I can totally relate to that in some ways. It's almost like it was a bigger problem than it needed to be in the first place. Yeah. 'Cause it's like, oh, here's this one thing about me. I'm bi, you know? And if you leave it at that, it's just the one thing about me. But then when you, like the fixation, it to me feels like a product of the surrounding culture, mm-hmm. fixating on it. You can't be this thing. And then you focus on it, yeah. and it's just difficult to do or be known mm-hmm. as anything else, right?
Exactly. And you fall into their discussions and thoughts of you. I wasn't sad, or I wasn't like very close to maybe depression because of me being gay. It was this fear of people realizing that, because when I started being more comfortable with it and telling some of my close friends at BYU, their initial reactions were like, that's so hard. I'm so sorry for you. Like, life must be really hard for you. And then you start to believe that, and then life becomes really hard for you. And you become hyperfixated in church on these things, you know, and like, you realize that when you tell someone, they're automatically going to assume that you're struggling.
Yeah.
And then because of that, you automatically start to be struggling.
Yeah, it kind of perpetuates its own problem, right? Yeah. Well, I identify in so many similar ways. Like, I was out as bi to, like, my husband, and I yeah. told my sisters, and that was, you know, it wasn't a big problem until it became a big problem.
Right.
And that is when I started struggling more with things like depression, like anxiety, yeah. suicide ideation. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is a way bigger problem, to where at the very beginning, this wasn't even, it wasn't a problem to begin with. And not only that, it wasn't even like a big part of me. It was just kind of like, oh, I'm bi, you know, no big deal.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it's this huge deal when you start getting doctrine and policies and honor codes and all these things tied into it. And you're like, well, why did this have to be a big deal in the first place?
Mm-hmm.
Totally. Okay. So you at this point were anxious coming back to BYU. And yeah. how was the reception when you came to BYU, when you felt like, I assumed you started telling roommates yeah. or friends or things about being gay.
Yeah, I feel very lucky. I had two roommates that I was going to live with when I came back from China, and I'd roomed with them before. And there was a lot of decisions and a lot of factors that went into decisions to not room with me. But I would also be, you know, weird to say that, like, me being gay and coming out to them wasn't one of those factors. And that was kind of hard to deal with, that like these people that I'd like been friends with for 3 years, you know, this was part of their decision, realizing I don't necessarily want to live with you.
Wow.
But,
yeah.
And that was really sad. But on the other hand, I found like two amazing roommates who are both gay. And I wanted that so that I could have at least a safe space every time I came home. And like, I knew that whatever I needed to talk about.
That's amazing. You had, so the three of you gay had this, mm-hmm. you were the same roommates. How many people were in the space? Because that's yeah. amazing to have a safe space like that.
Yeah, so just the three of us.
Okay.
And honestly, it was when I was in China, I performed in a musical. And as I was like singing in this musical and practicing, I thought back to high school of this this person who would always play the piano. And I remember going to his house and just like singing, and he'd play the piano and he'd sing along too. He was in musicals and I loved it. And I just remembered him and I was like, I wonder what he's up to. I haven't talked to him in like 4 years. So I called him, and like just over the phone, I was just like, oh, like, so yeah, I'm gay, and like, it's been really great, blah, 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 blah. And then he like also was like, oh, I am too. And I was like, cool. He's like, where are you living next year? Do you want to move in? He's like, yeah. And he's like, and one of my roommates is gay. Can he come with? And I was like, yes.
That's perfect.
That's exactly what I want. Like, yay. I want the three of us together.
Wow. So are you guys still roommates together?
We are.
Yeah. Oh, awesome.
That's my current living situation. So I do have that to be nice.
Yeah.
That's good.
Awesome. So then I'll ask some personal questions. Feel free to respond as much or as little as you like.
Okay.
But so have you ever dated boys? Or men, excuse me. I'm like boys because I'm so big now. I'm an alum. It's okay if you don't want to answer it.
I've been thinking about this. I think it would go on the list of like things that I don't feel too comfortable talking about.
Right. Have you considered it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And what would be some of the things prohibiting you from that if that was what you wanted to pursue?
Yeah. What's most interesting is just the thought of like, you hear so many, like the honor code finding out. Basically, the honor code office at BYU is the main reason. I don't really care a whole lot about, you know, what people think about me, like, in society, or, like, you know, my family knows, and they're, like, the most important. So, like, but it's just that thought that, like, if somebody random, like, if I were to, like, start dating and someone random that I don't know were to overhear a conversation I was having with one of my friends who's okay with that and just overheard that and could report me to the honor code office, and then, like, that allegation could be turned into something more than it is. And I luckily don't, I don't think I have a file in the honor code office, but I've heard, like, you know, people on BYU campus that just because they're such an advocate for the LGBTQ community, they have this huge file about them and they've never dated. They've never broken the honor code. And that just, that fear really just, like, is paralyzing.
Yeah, that's such an important point, because when the new honor code changes came out, one of the things not a lot of people were talking about was the stop reporting.
Yes, yeah.
Reporting on queer folks, you know, mm-hmm. on homosexual, whatever. And I feel like that was, like, one of the biggest, best changes right. ever, because for a queer person, you're, like, constantly looking over your shoulder
yeah.
for who's going to turn you in next.
Right.
I mean, did that occur to you in the first changes, or not
it
so much?
It didn't until Jerilyn told me about it. And then
okay.
I was like, oh, okay. That's awesome.
Yeah, it really is. Well, and for me, and it's funny because, like, we still carry these attitudes on past, like, BYU.
Yeah.
Because when in my old ward, and when I came out and started advocating, I was advocating as an active member
it's
of the gay
community. It's how gay people advocate.
We advocate. And started advocating for queer rights. I was basically turned in by a bunch of women in the Relief Society.
Oh.
And it was like BYU for adults.
Yeah.
Like, and so I remember going around the ward and constantly wondering, okay, who's the next woman who's going to tattle to the state
right.
president? Oh, Blair said this, Blair, whatever.
Yeah.
And I wasn't even dating a woman.
Right.
Like, you know, I'm just talking.
Just advocating.
And so just those, I felt like that was one of the biggest things of the honor code, just
mm-hmm.
being like, oh, we're not tattling on each other anymore.
Yeah.
Well, that's a really great start to creating a safe environment where people
yeah.
can be themselves.
For sure. Yeah. And with that in mind, I mean, like, I definitely, like, have dated, so, yeah. Nobody will turn me in. It'll be fine.
Can I ask, have you ever dated girls?
I have, yeah.
And how was that for you?
So, okay, so I've had two girlfriends.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, I've kissed, like maybe eight girls? I don't
mm-hmm.
know, somewhere around there. But, yeah.
I'm like, me too. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I've had two girlfriends. One was in high school. And we dated for a month and I never kissed her.
Uh-huh.
And then I had one during my freshman year, and, she's so amazing too. And I just, like, it was, like, very post-mission, and I, like, had to get up the courage to, like, kiss her, cause I thought that was, like, so important. But, like, it was just, like, you find, like, people that you, like, have a fun time being with. And I just, like spending time with both of them, you know? And then, like, it would get to that point that it's like, well, this is, like, what normal, like, straight people do when they start liking spending time with each other. They, like, start to date. And so I, like, gave it a try. But I had the hardest time showing physical affection to any women. Gosh, I remember this one lady, like, one woman invited me over to her house to just, like, watch Netflix, watch Sherlock, because she knew I loved that, and cuddle. She literally just said that. And I was like, yes, okay, we got this. And I, like, psyched myself out beforehand. And I get there, and I literally sat with my arms folded as she, like, cuddled up and leaned up against me. And I was so awkward. But, like, I could never bring myself to, like, physically show affection towards a woman because I knew what it meant to them. And it felt disingenuous to lie because it didn't mean that to me.
Yeah.
Specifically a kiss. Like, I knew these two women liked me. And I knew that it would have meant a lot, and they would have, like, talked to their roommates about it, but it didn't mean that to me. And so it just felt so disrespectful to them to try to, like, make that happen. And
wow.
So,
well, again, that's also
yeah.
very mature of you. Have you ever felt pressure to enter into, like, a mixed, obviously since you've dated girls, but thought about the idea of mixed orientation marriage just so you could, like, go to the temple and be married eternally? Because I know that was
yeah.
big with younger, or sorry,
right.
with older generations. I'm just wondering, like, getting the pulse
right.
of, like, what was your experience with the idea of mixed orientation marriages?
Yeah, the thought never crossed my mind. When I was 12 and made the decision, like, if I ever came out, I would leave the church. I also told myself that I would never marry and I would be celibate my entire life because I could never, I don't, even if the woman knew that I was gay, that I wasn't attracted to her that way, and then like it would just be like cheating her of this like experience in this life that she could have with someone that like, you know, loves her in the same way that, you know, they would love her. And so like it was never an option on the table to do that.
Yeah. When you talk about it, it's interesting how you talk so much about her needs and what she was experiencing, but you don't even talk about what you would be experiencing.
That's very Asian culture. Don't focus on yourself. Focus on them. And I get that a lot from my mom.
Yeah.
She's so selfless and spends her entire, like, every, like, day, like, thinking about her children and what she can do for them and what she can do for others. She never takes time to think about herself. And I think it's just rubbed off on all of the children.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know.
I'm like, well, you deserve love and happiness, my friend. You deserve it. You're considering your options then as far as, like,
mm-hmm.
what does a future look like for a gay Mormon? And then all of a sudden, the honor code releases this new updated
yeah.
version of the honor code. What was your reaction when this happened?
Yeah, I think like most people, first reaction as soon as I saw that they updated it and took out that clause was just like, it was just confusion. I was like, cool.
Were you in class or were you on campus or were you with your roommates? Where were you when
you
found out?
That first updated honor code, I was in class and I was sitting on Instagram and that's where I saw it.
Okay.
It was like the Restore Honor BYU.
Okay, yep.
And I saw that they had posted something about it. And so I went and I looked up and I was like, what does this mean? That's the overarching question on everyone's
right.
mind. What does this mean? So you like took out a clause that said homosexual behavior is like prohibited, but you didn't add anything. And the clause right above it very strongly said that, you know, marriage between a man and a woman, like no sexual relations outside of marriage between a man and a woman. Still, that's like, but like, I was like, what is happening? So, obviously I went to like Twitter and social media to try to figure it out. And I remember seeing like Fran, she had like posted that she had been in the honor code office and a picture of her there and kissing in front of the Brigham Young statue. And I started seeing other people and it was just like so many people that are like, Kevin just told me that yes, dating is fine for like, and dating, kissing, holding hands on campus is fine for people who, specifically LGB, that community on campus. And I was like, that's amazing. And like, it took a couple days to sink in and I had a hard time putting my fingers on like, what am I feeling? And I realized like, it was relief. I was like no longer worried about every single conversation I had with a stranger about if they figured this out about me, you know? Like, not because I'm actively dating, not because I'm going to be kissing or holding hands on campus, but because I couldn't be punished for doing that. And, like, for the first time in, like, since I'd been at BYU, I was back to, like, I could be myself. I felt like I had suddenly stepped back into this China self that I was able to be, where it was just me, and, like, being gay was a part of it. And that was amazing.
Wow, that was so beautiful. Well, and when I heard about it, I was cautiously
yeah.
optimistic, right? Like, again, like, what? Are you for reals?
Really?
And then, again, you go through and read all the things, and even people at the Honor Code office were saying, yeah,
mm-hmm.
it's okay. And then, did you watch that YouTube video of the one professor going
Jim
through?
Brow, yeah.
Yeah. What is his name?
Jim Brow. Yeah.
Jim Brow.
He's the first counselor in my ward.
Oh,
so,
yeah. Did you listen to his YouTube presentation?
So, I didn't actually watch the video.
No, just lie and say, yes, I did.
Okay.
I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
No, like I watched like the first bit. And
yeah.
I like read like comments and stuff.
Yeah.
And because I know him, and I know that I don't know the pronouns. I know his child's transgender.
Oh.
And so Jim's brother Brow has had like a lot of like struggles and thoughts with that. And so like I just know him so well and how like a great person he is. And so when I heard this, I was like, yeah, go.
Well, and how does it feel to have like actual BYU faculty openly advocating for queer folks, the LGB?
Amazing. Just phenomenal to know that there's like professors there that are just like, I get these struggles that students are going through and I'm like there for you. And that feels so good.
What has like, I don't know if you want to give me a percentage or what, but how's your experience been with BYU faculty as far as being supportive and not supportive? I assume it's a mix.
Oh, definitely a mix. Yeah. And it also looks, you know, I'd have to like pull from the faculty members that I've actually, that actually know that I'm gay, you know?
Oh, I see.
Cause you know, they're usually all of my Chinese professors know. And that's because class sizes are like 8 people, you know, you have a relationship, but like microbiology, senior level class sizes are 60 people. I'm not going to have a personal relationship with that professor.
Gotcha.
But like, you know, I guess that ties in. It's interesting, percentage-wise, I don't have a good percentage because I have gay privilege in the sense that, like, I can choose whether or not to be passing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I do not run into the same issues as somebody who's transgender or non-binary or non-gender conforming would run into because I still have this, like, choice of, like, being passing. So I have the choice whether or not to tell a professor. And so that privilege makes it so that, like, unless I can tell a professor's chill, I won't tell them or like come out to them.
Gotcha.
But the ones that I have, phenomenal. He's invited me. One of them's like invited me over to his home to like, you know, meet his like family, and his wife is a very big advocate for LGBTQ community. She's like helped me like find like therapists to like try to help with issues. And so it's been really good.
It's probably happened to everyone. You're sitting in Sunday school and suddenly you think, wait a minute. I've heard this all before, about 100 times. I'm ready for something new. Well, I'm happy to report that your dream Sunday school class is just a click away at the Sunstone Magazine podcast. Here, you get to hear the best Sunstone articles in an audible quality package. You'll hear about everything, from the first vision to feminism, from LGBT issues to scriptural interpretation, from polygamy to poetry, from scholarship to mysticism, from personal essay to fiction. Listen to some of our free episodes at patreon.com/sunstone. Come join the Sunday school class you wish you had.
I think sometimes people want to paint BYU as the bad guy, or even the honor code office, or CES as the bad guy. What is your response to people who are like, just leave BYU, just get out now?
I tell them what gives somebody inherently a right to be here and me not. Like,
exactly.
I have just as much as a right as like a cis hetero person to be here. I worked my ass off in high school trying to get good grades and extracurricular and write all these essays to like be here. You know, so why is it that because I'm born a certain way, I shouldn't be able to be here? And so
I love that so much. I love it. I attended both BYU and UVU, and I've had my own experiences. Everybody has their own path,
yeah,
right?
I also don't know if this is a swearing thing. Maybe I should.
Oh, you can. No.
Okay.
You're fine. This is Sunstone. More than one way to Mormon here. No, I just think it's just so unbelievably amazing that to see so many queer students just be like, no, this is my school. I'm staying.
Yeah.
That's, I think sometimes we pin a certain amount of like fragility on the queer community. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, you can't handle this. Hurry up and get out. Well, that's one person. That's one thing for a queer person to say that for themselves.
Yeah.
But like, if I'm hearing you, you're just like, I love it. I love your response.
Yeah. And like, so I did have a very interesting chance to be on this panel for a psychology major. Her thesis was, why do queer students at BYU, after becoming like cognizant of their identity, why do they choose to stay? And I have my own issues with that thesis. Why do I choose to stay? Because the underlying thought is like, I should leave.
Right.
You know? But like, we're not going to touch that. You know, so I was on this panel with like, I think it was like 8 gay people, 2 lesbian, and then 1 transgender, all BYU students. And for me, they're always like, why did you choose to stay? And I'm like, because I wasn't comfortable with it until my last year. And I'm not going to transfer and extend my like professional plans of going to med school, you know? So it just makes sense to stay. That's why I stay. But then I talked to other people, and there was this one person who said, like, he's like, I knew and I was openly out as gay all during like junior high and high school, and I chose to come to BYU. He's like, because I was from a small town in Florida, and like, I would have meant, it meant the world to me to go to a university where people shared my faith and my religion, and I wouldn't be like persecuted for that. And that made me think, like, when people say, like, if you don't like it, just leave. And I'm like, well, that's putting our entire identity as, like, queer. And it's not. People want to be here to find community and be in the church and, you know, have people who share their faith, their ideals. And so just because of this one thing that they can't change, why shouldn't they be here, you know?
Well, and plus the whole mentality assumes, like, if we have differences, we have to leave. And yeah. It's like, where are you going to go then? There's nowhere to go.
Yeah, so anybody who's different, we're just taking them out of the university?
Right, right. No, and I love the stance that has been happening with so many BYU students who are like, nope, I'm staking my ground, like, yeah. My stakes in the ground. I'm here too. This is my school too.
And it's both ways. It's that flexibility. If you want to stay, stay. If you want to transfer, transfer. And like, we support you. And that's like, we want what's best for you. So go and like live that, you know?
Amen, so. Brother. Amen. I love that. Yeah. Okay. So you find out these things are happening with the honor code and there's a sense of relief. And for a short time.
Oh my goodness.
And for that short, brief time before the clarification came out, what was just that short, brief time like?
It was the first time in my last two semesters at BYU that I felt like I didn't need a therapist.
Wow.
I had been struggling with needing to find therapy all fall semester, but telling myself, you're too busy. Telling myself, like, if you get therapy, what about all the people that need it more than you? You're stopping them from being able to get it.
Is that partly your Asian culture coming out too?
Oh, I swear. You can probably hear that now.
No, I have Asian friends and I hear the same thing and I'm just like, no, you deserve it.
Yeah. It's so hard for me to tell myself that like I like deserve to like think something or feel something. But like, so all fall semester, I was just like, I know I need this because there's a lot of things I need to work out. Like, you know, body dysmorphia, things that happened in China during like dating, you know, things in my life. Also being gay at BYU, you know, and then like I applied right at the beginning of winter semester for Flourish and I like sent in all the information, but it just takes a while to like get openings to like find a spot. So there was about a month, month and a half. Before
and
they,
just
like,
a shout out to Flourish really fast. Any LGBTQ Mormon person looking for a therapist, Flourish is definitely the place to go. I am lucky enough to be one of the recipients of that organization, and it has been life-changing. So check out Flourish if you're a queer Mormon looking for help. Yeah. So sorry to interrupt you.
Oh, for sure. And it's like subsidized therapy for LGBTQ. So like even if there's not a means to pay for it, get therapy, get help, and they will find the way to like make it happen. It's amazing. So it was crazy because the beginning of the semester, I talked to my parents for the first time after a year and a month earlier about me being gay. It had just been this topic that we didn't touch on for a year because of how hard it was for my mom. And it was surrounded around, Mom, I need therapy because I'm at the church's university. And when I go to church, I hate myself. I hear and I see this image. It's not anything that anyone says. It's that image and hope that I had all of growing up, that I was going to be married in the temple, that I was like, you know, maybe could marry in the temple, like find a woman that I could fall in love with, you know, go on this
maybe
couple mission.
Maybe pray to be a little bi.
Exactly,
right?
Or something like that. Yep. And like, just like going into church and just like hating myself. And I was like, that's why I need. Like, I need to find a healthy way to deal with this. I need to find a healthy way to talk to God without screaming at him and being like, why did you make me this way? Why would you make your church incongruent with me? You know. Anyways, so like I kept feeling that. And then this change happened and I was on the high. I was just like, I feel great. I feel happy. Maybe it's all the vitamins my mom sent me. I'm getting like four of them every morning. Anyways, no. And I just like felt like I can do this. Like, it's so much better now. Yeah.
And then unfortunately, the CES commissioner's office clarifies that that's not what this means. Instead, it means that obviously homosexual dating or same-sex dating, whatever they call it, is not okay because it doesn't lead to eternal marriage. How and when and what was that like for you, please?
Yeah. So that morning, was actually my first therapy session Wednesday morning and I went in and I was so happy. So it felt weird to try to like intentionally dig these things up that had been plaguing me to like talk about it. Cause I could finally get into therapy cause I was feeling so happy for the past 2 weeks. And that morning, this overarching theme of it was like, cause the therapist who's really amazing also went to BYU, didn't have the chance to be out. That was not an option. you could only be closeted, you know? And so he understood, and he's like, yeah, I had to be closeted my entire time. And I was like, at least I have that. I was like, for these past 2 weeks, I was like, it's so much for the better. At least I can be out and be myself, and we could focus on these other things. And so maybe that setup is what made it so hard. I was sitting in my 11 o'clock class, bacterial pathogenesis. I was just sitting there in class listening to him talk about virulence factors. And I started falling asleep. So I pull out my phone and I check my email, and I just see this email from CES. And I was like, okay. And I read it, and it was similar feelings. It was disbelief, because this was an oddly pointed email. It was an oddly pointed letter. There was a very specific community that I was targeting with a very specific message. And I thought, what in the world? And so then I clicked on it says, click here for the interview with Kevin Up. And I clicked on that, and it's like burned in my mind. I could see the bold in italics where it says, question, can LGBTQ students kiss, hold hands, and date on campus and not have repercussions? And then the answer that Kevin Out said, he said, so-and-so in his letter said, you know, because homosexual behavior cannot lead to eternal marriage, therefore is it incompatible with the policies or whatever set forth by the honor code. And then after that, he had a sentence where he just said, so homosexual behavior and actions will not be accepted on BYU campus. And my heart just sunk, because I felt so betrayed, because he was the one that told us it was fine. And now I'm reading that he said it's not. And before I go on into like that story and what it means, like, I don't blame him at all. The more I've learned about this situation, the more I realize he was blindsided by it too, like in many ways. Like, I think he's awesome, and he's done a lot for LGBTQ students at, you know, BYU. But just like in that moment, I was just like, how could this person who was like advocating so much for me do this?
So you think he was taking orders from the top then and saying what had to be said?
I think possibly. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I just like, all I've seen, because that was just an interview I like read from him from CES, but everything I've heard of people interacting with him have been so positive.
Okay.
So I was very willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. But in that moment, you know, very emotional. And then that class ended. I like barely was holding it together. That class ended, and I teach a review in the exact same classroom right after. Mm-hmm. So I knew I had a 10-minute gap. So everyone left the classroom, and I closed the door, and I sat in the corner, and I bawled for 10 minutes straight. And I was just crushed, because I no longer could be myself. It wasn't that I couldn't date, because I wasn't. It wasn't that I couldn't kiss and hold hands on campus, because I wasn't. It was that I couldn't be myself. Mm-hmm. And like, I bawled, and then this student walks in on me, and I'm like wiping my tears off, and I'm like, all right, let's teach you about anatomy. Like, you want to know about the heart? Let's learn about the heart, you know?
Yes.
It's
classic, just the show must go on,
yep.
Right? That's how it is for a queer person.
Yeah. And honestly, that was the rest of the day. I had my Chinese modern literature class there, and I was just sitting there, and I was like, it's fine. It's going to be fine. And then my friend texted me, and he's like, I saw the changes in the honor code. I'm so sorry. How are you? And I just, that like set me off, and I just started crying, and I like couldn't stop myself. So I left the classroom and went to the bathroom and just cried in a stall for 15 minutes. Cause I just like couldn't believe what had happened. And then one of my friends came afterwards, and she was so amazing. She saw me, and she just started bawling, and she just sat there, and we found a bench. She just hugged me for like 20 minutes as I cried, and she cried. And I just like, I felt so much more love, actual Christ-like love from her in those 20 minutes that I think I felt from my university in my past 4 years, because she sat there. She didn't ask me how I was feeling. She didn't ask me to talk. She didn't want to like try to justify through it and why the church did these things. She just cried for 20 minutes and held me. And that was amazing. And then And then after that, I cried more. I talked to people. I cried. And that was pretty much my Thursday, Friday. My Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. And as I look into it more, I become more and more logical in thinking about it and realizing, like, what happened. But I don't know. We can talk about that.
Well, it's just... this is so many of the similar responses and stories of people I've been talking to. I've been asking BYU students, BYU students to come talk with me, and most of them were too afraid to. But this experience is very similar to yours. Just like it was like just weeping, just undeniable weeping of an entire community. Mm-hmm. And you saw it even among the allies too, like with your friend, to just be like, I'm just going to sit here and cry with you. Yeah. You know, like, it reminded me of the story of Job when Job was down at the very last thing, or very last rung, the scripture said, and there were no words, there was no speaking or anything. It was just weeping.
Yeah.
And
it was so disheartening to have a letter that they knew was pointed at the LGBTQ community to start off by saying for the benefit of all involved. Because it was not to benefit the LGBTQ community, and you knew that's who you were writing it for, but you were saying that so you could like benefit the church's like image or something. I don't know. That pointed like message. And then the problem with a lot of times church members, and as I found out this last week with CES, is they use doctrine to reaffirm belief to try to answer questions. You saw that, we see that at BYU campus. There's a bunch of people who are reading the family proclamation over to the world to try to like weaponize it and say like, no, this is like what it is. This is the doctrine. Like you need to live with it or leave. And I'm just like, that document doesn't mean a lot to you. Like I have sat at the side of my bed bawling as I read the paragraph in the right column, like three down, that tells me that marriage between like a man and a woman is eternal. You know, like I've like done so much with that document, you know, and it doesn't mean what you're making it mean. And so to have like the church entity boil down everything of who I am and the acceptance that gave to the fact that I couldn't have eternal marriage. I was like, thank you for reminding me that. I know that probably better than and at a more deeper level than you ever will.
And which is so strange too, because celibacy doesn't lead to eternal marriage either, but they are asking celibacy, right?
Non-committal makeouts. So NICMOs on BYU campus don't lead to that.
Right.
There was a non-member that says, I'm a non-member at BYU and all of my dating is never going to lead to eternal marriage. Am I breaking the honor code?
Wow.
And I'm like,
good point.
Because
yeah,
when that's your, like, you're not your response, is that like,
So, moving forward then, you're graduating soon.
Yes.
How are you feeling about that?
Relieved.
Definitely.
Incredibly relieved, yeah.
Well, what are your plans moving forward after that?
So, after that, I'm going to take the MCAT on May 29th.
Way to go.
Apply to med schools right after that, and then I'll have a gap year to just kind of do whatever, and then...
Go back to China.
Maybe. Yeah.
Oh. So. Wow. Thank you so much for sharing your story.
Yeah.
What I would love to hear from you is if you have any advice for people who are discussing the topic or social media, the topic or whatever, what advice would you give to people to be like things not to say, things to say? What kind of things are you doing that's triggering? How can people help support queer BYU students?
Right. That's a great question. First thought I have is people need to understand what the argument is. They need to realize that, like, at least for me, maybe I don't speak for the entire queer community at BYU, but for me and the majority of people I know, the change to allow us to date and hold hands and stuff like that, like, it was never about the doctrine. I do not hope that the church changes its doctrine and allows me to marry in the temple someday, marry a man in the temple someday. I don't want that. I don't want them to disvalue their belief system and what they've held so dear, you know? So the change in the honor code was never about changing the doctrine there. It was just about giving queer folks the agency to choose. And that's like the most important thing. And so first off, all of the posts that I see on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram they need to, like, take a hot second when they realize that they're all like, I don't know, like, what LGBTQ people were thinking. The church is never going to change their stance on this. And I was like, well, you don't get it. That wasn't it. I don't want the church to change their stance, you know? And maybe that's just because I've made the decision to leave, you know? But, like, that's not what the thing is about. So from the side of the ally, from the side of allies or people who are in the church, understand what the argument is about. Understand that it's about acceptance of these people and the choice that they have to be themselves. And it's going to be, and once that happens, it's the bridge to letting people learn how to be LGBTQ and stay in the church. You know, it's the bridge to making more of these people have that ability.
Would you also say there's a certain level of, like, victim blaming in there too, of being like, what did you expect? It's like,
yep. And that's the next thing. I had a whole Twitter rant about this. Because when allies or, like, you know, well-meaning LGBT, when well-meaning, like, Mormon people say things, I'm like, okay, cool. But the hardest thing, and I realized the thing that frustrated me the most and hurt the most about this, was to hear LGBTQ people say, you should have realized this. The church never changes. They will always hurt you. And I'm just like, you changed the dichotomy of this argument from aggressor to victim. It's no longer the, and aggressor is a strong word, but it's no longer their fault. It's the victim's fault. At the basis of that, what you're saying is, I'm not smart enough to realize I was being duped. Or I'm stupid to think that things could have changed for the better. I'm stupid to have a belief that my university that I love could have validated me and allowed me to have be myself and my identity. So when people say that, they need to realize what they're saying and how hurtful that is.
Well, it's not their place to take away your hope.
Yeah.
Anybody is allowed to have hope. And mm-hmm. I think sometimes people find it empowering to, like, crush their hope. I don't know, to make themselves feel better about right. their choices.
Well, and it's like, it's a defense mechanism, you see, because I think a lot of times these people have been hurt by the church, by members in the church. So as for them, for a defense, they say, I don't expect anything good to come of this church, you know, but you can't project that onto every other person. Because that's not our experience. We want to believe that life can be better.
Right.
At this university. So.
So I'm hearing a couple things. One, educate yourself on the topic. Two, also stop telling BYU students or queer BYU students when it's time to give up hope or victim blame them. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else you can think of? Obviously, stop telling them they need to leave.
Yeah. Yeah. Stop saying, like, yeah. if you don't like it, leave, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I think those are probably, like, my big things about it. And it's just interesting because it's from both sides, you know. It's from ally sides, LGBTQ people sides. We all need to, like, be educated on how to, like, talk about this in a better way.
Oh, it's so true. It's so true. And it's like our friend Jerilyn Hasselpool always says, is when you have one foot in both camp or both camps, both sides just sit and punch in the balls.
Yeah.
And that's what it feels like. It just feels like, because this is someone who's been towing yeah. the queer Mormon line for a few years. Mm-hmm. And I promise you, I have heard just as much triggering garbage from people outside the church as I have people inside the church.
Yeah.
You get it from both sides relentlessly. Yeah. Both of them trying to crush your hope.
Yeah. Because that's the only way they've learned to deal with it.
Exactly.
It's to, like, enemize the other side.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, I'm on your team, Danny. thank you so much for telling me your story and sharing everything with me. I wish you the best of luck after graduation and
thank
hope you.
You
do well on the MCAT. And I hope you have this big, beautiful future because I can already see it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks everyone for listening. This has been another episode of the Sunstone Fireside Podcast.